Welcome to Enduring Grief, Healing Practices and True Stories of Living After Loss, where we dive into real, honest conversations about the journey through grief and the support that makes it possible. I'm Sarah Peterson, an LCSW, and in this space, I bring my experience as someone who has walked this path, as well as my work with my nonprofit, Clear Morning. I'm often joined by two incredible guests, Dr. Marla Speyer and Dr. Dean Sharp, both incredible people and physicians who've spent their lives caring for people and have supported me personally on my journey through grief. In our first episode, I'll share my personal story and how I've come to this work, why it matters so deeply to me, and how it might resonate with you. Whether you're navigating your own loss or standing by someone who is, this space is for you. Join me as we uncover the stories, the struggles, and the hope that lead to healing. Let's walk through this journey together. Welcome back to Enduring Grief, Healing Practices, and True Stories of Living After Loss. I am with my favorite guests. Everybody's my favorite guest, but you guys are really my favorite guests, right? Marlis and Dean are here, and today we're going to talk about forgiveness. And I just want to acknowledge that forgiveness can be so hard, and maybe like other episodes, you cringe at the thought of forgiving yourself or somebody else because you just don't quite deserve it. And we're going to challenge you to reconsider what that means, the definition and the act of forgiveness. So please join us on this adventure and this investigation through what is possible for you and your grief process. How's that, guys?
Sounds good.
Okay. Well, one of the things I would like to start with is the definition of forgiveness. I mean, I think in terms of the Webster's Dictionary, we all have a pretty good idea, but I think each person marches around with their own idea of what forgiveness is. And for me, forgiveness has meant different things for different situations, honestly. Like sometimes, well, one time in particular, I don't even use the word forgiveness because it just feels like I'm not there yet. And that's the person who killed my daughter. So, you know, I think in my victim's impact statement, I committed myself to never forgiving him. And I'm going to stand by that. But what I do know is that I do everything I can to not let him take anything else from me. And some people might say that's forgiveness. But whether that's driving the road that we were on or putting my kids in the car, period, he's taken enough and he no longer gets to take those things from me too. Do you think that sounds like forgiveness?
I think that sounds like a piece of forgiveness.
A piece
for
of forgiveness.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, ultimately, when we forgive another, there are a couple of principles that need to be remembered. And that is that forgiving somebody never means that what was done was okay, or that somehow you're erasing necessarily what had occurred. But instead, what you're doing is taking something which occurred in the past, which you are still carrying in the present, and allowing it, as you said, to no longer steal your life or your peacefulness, to let go of it and to allow yourself to move on in the world, to unencumber yourself with that past event. And oftentimes it requires boundaries that you would establish, because reconciliation is not an automatic part of forgiveness at all. You can forgive without ever reconciling with somebody.
Okay, explain the difference, Dean. Give it to us straight.
Well, reconciling is where you go to continue to have an ongoing relationship with someone. Spouses do that all the time. Kids and their parents do that all the time. Dear friends do that all the time. Someone says or does something which is a slight or hurtful, and after a conversation, they move forward, and it's not like the hurt didn't happen, but they're willing to leave it in the past and to continue on with a friendship.
Got it.
And to rebuild trust over some period of time in which the behavior doesn't occur again. Whereas forgiveness without reconciliation, you can do that with someone who's dead. You can do that with someone you will never see again. You can do that with someone who it would be frankly dangerous for you to go have a conversation with them. Or situations where you don't even know who the person was. You're a victim of some crime and the person was never apprehended. You may never know their identity. And that doesn't mean that you can't forgive and move on for your own peace of mind.
Mm-hmm. Now, okay, is that your definition of forgiveness as well as the answer to my question?
I think that's how I describe forgiveness. I'm not sure it fulfills a Webster's definition, but
no.
My description.
Well, yeah, it's not supposed to, because then this podcast would be not as interesting.
Right.
Now, does that align with your interpretation and how you operate in life around forgiveness, or is that your message to others, and are they the same?
No, that's how I that's how I operate in the world. If you look at forgiveness and you look at all of the spiritual traditions on the planet, forgiveness is a huge part of them. But every one of them has this quid pro quo kind of thing with it. And the piece that we're most familiar with is the Judeo-Christian religion, although that's not the only one where the same kind of a statement is made, but it's really, you'll forgive others as they forgive you, or
and you'll be forgiven.
And you will be forgiven as you forgive others. And so it even goes to Matthew, where it's, you know, your father will forgive you to the extent that you're willing to forgive others. Your father will not forgive you to the extent in which you're unforgiving to others.
Uh-oh.
So there is a quid pro quo, and you can understand it from a psychodynamic standpoint, too. To the extent that you have your fingers wrapped around the throat of another in resentment and ongoing aged anger and blame, you are closed to receiving forgiveness from others. And you're close to even doing your own self-compassion and your own forgiveness of yourself, because your energy is all focused on this other neck.
Okay, that's a lot to unpack, Dean. You said a lot there.
I did.
Good stuff. Okay, Marlis, what is your definition or description?
Well, forgiveness is not just with grief. It's moment to moment. But since the focus here is grief, both grief and forgiveness are huge cauldrons of emotion. I mean, I've heard them described as wild animals and icebergs, and, you know, like you just start at the top and there's just this huge amount underneath. And the emotions are inevitably hurt, anger, guilt. I mean, it's all the really, really hard emotions to feel. And I would describe forgiveness as being willing to actually feel the emotion and just allow it to be and let it go. And my definition of forgiveness is it's freedom.
I like that too. Yeah, because that's what you get. That's the payoff. It's not the reconciliation. It's not anything other than the freedom in your own story.
Yep.
To keep going.
Yep.
In a more peaceful way.
Well, and inevitably, when I have the deep forgiveness work in my life, after I get done forgiving the other person, God, or what is the world, it always ends up coming back to, if I can just have that same kind of forgiveness for myself, that is really freedom.
True story. And Dean, if we think about the hands on the neck situation, you know, where does self-forgiveness come into that analogy?
Well, we often pick up the knife and use it against ourselves.
Yeah, so we've got our own hands on our own neck.
And Marlis talks about the emotions that are around a lack of forgiveness or the hurt that we experience at the hands of another. And oftentimes, there's two levels to those emotions. There are the superficial emotions that we feel, which is anger and blame and resentment and rage, and they're big, powerful emotions. Underneath those emotions, deeper in, is hurt and sadness and helplessness, all of which are really, really hard to feel, because we feel as though we were vulnerable in the moment that we were hurt.
Yeah, the trust is broken.
Yeah. And so what happens is we cover over our tender emotions with these big, rageful, powerful things in an attempt to tell ourselves that we're in control.
Mm-hmm.
And the reality is that we're not in control. from the standpoint of all that revenge stuff and blame and whatever. And we hold on to it so long because we want to continue to protect ourselves from the ultimate feeling of vulnerability that we had.
Yeah, and I think what's especially complicated or more intense, if I may, during the grief process, like an acute grief process, because you're already living amidst this incredible sense of powerlessness. And so something like that is a place that artificially can give that sense of control. And so no wonder people maybe cling to it a little bit longer or harder after death. Oh, Marlis might disagree.
Oh, no.
Oh, you agree?
Oh, I totally agree.
Oh, I just
listen how smart I am.
Yeah, no, I just
people, think, doctors agreeing with me. I love it.
I think of all the places we're so angry.
We're angry at the cancer. We're angry at the doctors. We're angry at the person who left us. We're angry at ourselves for all the things we didn't do right.
Yeah.
We're angry. And all of that is, I just think of Buddha. Life is suffering, and it's not going to turn out the way you want, and you will get sick, and you will get old. I mean, not only you, but the people around you, they will die.
Well, yeah, and I'm just thinking, like, as far as tools go, I might use this whole hands around the neck thing quite a bit because, you know, that's my language. I really enjoy the hands on the neck, Dean, so thank you. And maybe we stop and ask ourselves, like, whose hands, whose neck, and to what end, right? To what? How long am I going to continue to squeeze my own or the other's neck before I say, uncle?
Right.
Well, what am I getting from this?
Exactly.
Power, control.
But it's fake.
It's
well,
fake.
Of course.
Because
inherently
it's fake.
Fake.
But if I'm just picturing my hands on the neck and I'm squeezing so tight, like, honestly, who's in charge? The person who's...
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Holding.
Yeah.
So it's kind of the antithesis of what I'm aiming for here, right?
Well, Thich Nhat Hanh said that when you're feeling all that anger, really the only person who is hurt is the person who's angry.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the definition of resentment is drinking poison, expecting the other person to die.
And so what if they're already dead? It's really pointless.
It's really pointless.
I mean, right. It's really pointless, which brings us to this topic. Like, what do we do if we're so hurt by the person who's gone? I mean, we've got the forgiveness issue, like the one I talked about. You know, somebody perpetrated against my family and caused a tragedy. So there's the forgiveness around that. As a major issue that I will grapple with till my dying breath, I think. And I've mitigated it by telling myself the very thing I started this episode with, which is he no longer gets to take more from me. He's taken enough. And there's a lot of forgiveness stuff to unpack. So I'm trying to move through it at a steady clip, right? Okay.
Okay.
We're laughing at something that we know is not funny, but maybe I'm funny. So that's why we're laughing.
No, it's so human.
It's so human.
This is so human. I mean, if there's one thing I can just put in here, forgiveness is over and over and over and over. It's just like you have SUGs or sudden upwelling of grief. All the emotions of powerlessness and anger and vulnerability and all of that, they just show up again.
Yeah.
And then you have to go through the process again.
Over and over.
There is no done.
There is no
path that goes all the way.
There is no path that goes all the way, and there are tools that help us get to that path really efficiently, which I think is how we live our most meaningful life, is to be efficient in the process. And I know that that sounds very clinical, but in a moment when you are overwhelmed, like for example, when I'm driving that road, I have to have that tool dialed in to go. So that's what I mean by efficient. Like I have to go through that. He doesn't get to take it. Okay. And here we go. Drive. So that's what I mean by efficient, is that it's a rehearsed strategy for me to move through something that's very hard and uncomfortable. And it comes up, like you said, sometimes randomly, sometimes expectedly, but nonetheless, I lean on that strategy because I practiced it, right? So that's that forgiveness. But the forgiveness that we're going to move to right now is what happens if they're dead, because you're definitely not going to get any feedback. You're definitely not going to get the chance to even set a boundary, right?
Right.
How do we do it?
I don't think it matters.
Well, of course it matters.
I don't know.
I think it matters in this teaching moment for people. It has to matter because that holds people back.
I guess I was just thinking that since these are about grief, that we could almost go to a presumption that it's about some kind of death.
Yes.
And I really think that forgiveness doesn't have much to do with the other person.
Okay, there we go.
They don't need to be alive. I mean, I have spent years forgiving my father, who died
11
years ago. Yeah, yeah. And I have spent years, you know, forgiving my adopted son who jumped off the bridge and my friend who went weird, psychotic at the end and ditched us. I mean, people, my brother, oh my gosh.
But I think like a lot of people don't think that that's possible. I think they think that the death has occurred, as has the relationship, as has the opportunity for growth in the relationship. And so we're here to say no.
No.
So how do you do it?
Well, I think there's, first of all, if one really gets clear about the dynamic that's going on, and I've sort of started that part of the conversation, first of all, it happened in the past. It's no longer in the present moment. I mean, whatever the hurt was, whatever the incident was, it occurred some time ago. So it's not currently occurring. So on the one level, here you are going through your life, you driving down a road or me taking a walk on a Saturday morning with people that I love, and I see a curve on the road or a face coming towards me on the hike that reminds me of this incident that occurred long ago. And to the extent that I haven't done my forgiveness work and truly let go of it, in that moment, I am off and running with all of the remembered incident and into all of the emotions again in this moment for something that occurred in the past.
Mm-hmm.
And then what happens is that my peacefulness, just like you said, you know, my peacefulness in this moment has been robbed by this other person.
Mm-hmm.
My experience is owned by another human being. So the first step in forgiveness is to finally get sick of that.
Yeah, I've had enough.
It's like I am just done with allowing my experience to be owned by another person.
And really quick, I don't want to make you lose your thought, but in the grief process, there are very few things that you can dead end, right? That you can be sick of and say, I'm done with this part. I do believe that this is one of the things that even if you have to revisit it in order to manage it, you can say, I'm sick of it. I am making a change. Like that is within you, unlike so many parts of the grief process. Agree or disagree?
I agree that that's somewhat true. And I also agree that even in the grief process, you can reach a place where you are sick of grieving in a way that continues to retell the story of how this person is completely absent in your life and instead begin to tell the story about how much you did love and how much you did care, and how they live on with you in some form, and you now have a larger container to hold it all in so that it no longer is the same. So it's not to say that this forgiveness issue is just going to go away.
Right.
I mean, your mom and your dad did what your mom and your dad did that you need to forgive him for. This guy mm-hmm. did what he did. And so there are going to be times when you'll end up reworking it. But the beginning of it is to finally be sick of having your equanimity and your ability to be peaceful in the world robbed by something over which you have no control.
Cannot be changed.
I mean, you have no control from the standpoint of you cannot redo the past. I've also heard that forgiveness, to forgive, is to give up the fantasy that your past can be better.
Oh, well, that's good. That's rich.
Yeah.
Well, just another fantasy to grieve,
yeah,
right?
No,
but that it could have been better. Like, let it go. It wasn't.
Right. It was what it was.
Mm-hmm.
But there is a place, if we are honest with ourselves and we niggle through what's going on in these dynamics, we hold on to this stuff because we keep thinking that person is going to come crawling on their knees 10,000 miles, begging at their knees for forgiveness and plea. And certainly not going to happen if the person is dead.
Right. That's for sure not happening. But I don't think it happens too often in the living either.
No.
It certainly never happened to me that I can think of.
If it is going to happen, it already would have.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there would have been an opportunity. And you see, we're talking the big things too. The little things that happen every day. I mean, every day there's something. There's some place I am not present with Marlis in a way that she wants me to be.
Yeah.
Or I don't respond in a way that's elegant. There are lots of times when I'm fairly inelegant. There are many, many situations like that where we give each other a break and we say, oh, yeah, I forgive you and I still love you and I'm going to try and do better even though I'm still human and all of that. I mean, I do that all the time.
Like one of my negative core beliefs is about being in trouble and something's wrong with me. Like
yes.
I combat that a lot, but maybe the true negative core belief is that I am unforgivable.
Yes.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay, it's happening right here.
Right. And deeper than that is even unworthy.
Unworthy.
And not enough. And under all of that is the essential nature, powerless and helpless.
That's true. Although I do think, like, I think I'm lovable, but if I screw up, I don't think I'll survive it.
Yeah.
I'm terrified of it that, all the time.
That mm-hmm. the love is conditional.
Mm-hmm. Weird. Okay, so what's step two? Dean gave us step one, which is getting sick of it, so you say enough. What would you say the next thing you can do to forgive somebody who's gone, Marlis?
I'm back to naming the feelings.
Mm-hmm. I'm angry, I'm sad.
I'm sad.
Betrayed.
I'm betrayed. And I mean, if you want to really get to ultimate forgiveness, is when have I felt this way before? And when did I feel like that before that? And when was the very youngest I felt like that? Because, I mean, let's take my brother who died at 49. And, oh my gosh, he was a very withdrawn person to the point that my mother remembers the last words that he said to her were, "Don't touch me." And when he died, I wanted to tell him how much I loved him and to say goodbye, but those were both unacceptable concepts, words. He wouldn't hear them. And I felt so rejected, excluded, unloved, undisconnected, all of those incredibly painful emotions as he was dying. I mean, ugh, and betrayed. And, you know, if I keep going back to my earliest memories, I remember my brother sitting on my chest, spitting in my face. And that is powerless, betrayed, disconnected, right. Unloved, unworthy. And to forgive him for who he was during his life and who he was at his death meant going back and being willing to feel that sense of powerlessness and understand my brother was doing the best he could.
Okay, that's like step three, big step three.
Yeah, no, everyone, I believe, is always doing the best they can. Everyone.
And you can always do better. No, I'm just kidding.
And like I say, everyone has a bummer factor.
Right. We have like a meter that we use at our house and we're like, hold your hand real low. Like, I'm doing my best. Or am I doing my best? Like, they're all my best, depending on the day and how much sleep I had and whether I've eaten and all the things. But sometimes my best is like a rocket ship. And sometimes my best is not there.
It's a lot about how much reserve and resilience you have at that moment.
Exactly.
But so we're like, all freaking human.
Oh, that's right. Okay, so this I think will be really interesting. And I didn't prepare you guys for this part, but you're grieving. You share a friend, lifelong friend. This friend dies. It was tragic how your relationship unfolded at the end. Devastating. Have you both forgiven this person? One. Two, how different were your processes to get there? And what do you wish you would have known going into it about the process of forgiveness for this friend? Does that make sense?
Yeah. I can go there.
Okay. So have you forgiven?
So much farther down the path than I was. What I would like to feel is I would like to remember the good times we had with him and not have it be so flavored by how terrible his death was. I'm not quite there yet.
And has
I have gaps where I can just go, oh, wow, remember when we went skiing or we cooked this meal or we did this? And it was so lovely. And I just think of not only us, but all the people he threw under the bus at times in his life.
At the end, there was only one man left standing, right? One friend that remained of a very large circle of people who loved and cared for each other for
decades. One friend who was not even from that long a period of time. I mean,
yeah. Did you see your process of forgiveness as something that unfolded very differently than Dean's?
I don't know that we've ever talked about it. You asked about what would I say to myself at the very beginning.
What do you wish you knew at the beginning of this?
Absolutely nothing different. I really think each one of us, the process we go through is what we're meant to learn. And so I think I needed to be really hurt, really, really hurt and really, really angry and really, I mean, I'd turn his picture upside down in the closet and shove it in the back.
So maybe you would have said, trust the process. I know that you say that anyway, but... Just as for our listeners,
I don't think you can go back and say to yourself, oh, gee, do this differently. And if you take your own life and you go back and think about yourself 10 years ago and you really just hold yourself in compassion, what could you have said differently?
Well, sometimes I think it can be driven by a sense of hope, like you're going to make it. You're going to get through, like this is not going to gobble you up. The hurt caused by your friend, the death of my child, the failing of a class my freshman year of college, like things that in the moment feel unsurvivable. I do think that there would be, oh, it'd be so nice to be able to just whisper in that version back then and say, you're actually going to be okay.
Would you have listened?
I'm not stubborn. I don't know if I would have listened. But I would listen now. And I lean on that wisdom that I know I've cultivated over the years now. And so that's why I always come back to this in my own mind. And sometimes even in these episodes, like to know that what I needed to hear in those hard moments were trust the process or you were going to be okay is content for today's life too.
My hope for anyone listening is that as you listen to the human journey that is being told in story, this podcast, you can see that it's the universal human journey. Yeah. It's yours too.
You're right. It is. And I want to know, Dean, do you think your process of forgiving your friend has been different than Marlis's?
I think yes. And I think it's different. It all is about forgiveness, but our experiences were profoundly different at the end. Our relationship, while close, was different. Each of us had a different kind of relationship with my friend. So what's clear to me is that I don't have, as I might, because as he withdrew and was nasty at the end, there were so many opportunities for me to say, I'm out of here. I'm done with you. I don't need to put up with this. Die alone kind of a thing. And what I knew from life before is that I would then end up in a place where I would have not said the things that I really thought I needed to say to him at the end of his life, nor would I have done what I promised to do at the beginning before it all blew up, which was to accompany him to the end. And so in spite of the fact that I was pretty angry and hurt, I also was clear that I said the things I needed to say to him about how much I cared about him and loved him for all the years that I did.
Mm-hmm.
And I accompanied him until his last breath.
Wow.
So I don't have much forgiveness issue with myself other than my contribution to the schism that created this blow up on his part, which I obviously had a part of. I mean, we were in relationship together, and some things that I'd done disappointed him. I think way out of proportion to what they were worth, but they did.
Mm-hmm.
That's just the reality.
Mm-hmm.
I have forgiven myself for that piece. I feel badly that it resulted in what it resulted in, but I'm not hanging on to that part anymore.
Do you think you've forgiven him?
Now, from the standpoint of forgiving him for where he went in the last few months of his life, I think I have a lot of space for his reality and how helpless and how so much of the dysfunction of his own childhood just showed up at the end in its own kind of a way. While there's a part of me that says it wasn't right and how he treated us was not okay, and I'm not going to ever say it was okay, I can hold him in a space where I can say, and it was really hard for him, and he was really profoundly inelegant, and he is, as all of us are in many ways, profoundly wounded human being, mm-hmm. who, in the face of his dying time, which he was not prepared for in any way, exploded in ways that were not pretty. So from the standpoint of, I don't find myself angry with him or hateful of him. I find myself regretting that his last months, which could have been truly, as last months often are, a beautiful experience, turned out to be kind of chaotic and ugly. Mm-hmm. But there's also a part where I have to ask the question, was it destined that the only way this man could die was in chaos and ugliness?
That's quite possible.
And I don't know enough to answer that question.
So you have forgiven?
I think I've let go of a lot of it. I don't walk around, you know, in some sort of a turmoil and unpeaceful around a lot of it. There are times when I say, oh, honey, you were such a booger. Or, oh, honey, you just so missed it. It's kind of a sadness more than a blame and an anger. So I guess if that's probably a reconciliation. You see, we're never going to be friends like that again. The reconciliation I have is sort of reconciling again with what we had before those last few months of his life. I mean, really, decades of friendship.
Do you guys miss him?
I do.
Yeah, on occasion, yeah.
I miss him when I have a project that I just am dying to do. We did so many posterity projects together.
Miss him when we're up on the ski hill and it's freezing cold, because he and I went up on the top of the summit when it was 75 degrees below zero.
Oh my gosh.
And wind chill factor, and no one else would go with us, but we had a great time.
That's very, very, very cold.
It was very, very, very cold. They would not allow you to have any skin showing.
So how does one know, okay, I've forgiven? Is it when you can really say the meter of joy taking and theft has subsided?
How peaceful am I?
How peaceful am I? There's the question, folks. And I think that there's, I don't know, this is me projecting based on my own experience, which is what I'm really good at. But I can get there easier if the word forgiveness isn't necessarily part of it, because I think the word forgiveness is laden with these ideals for me that I'm not necessarily okay with for each relationship. And so when I can say, is my peace mine? Do I have peace? Oh, Marlis, what? Say it. Tell me.
Well, I think it's like enlightenment. I think you may have glimpses of enlightenment, or you may have glimpses of forgiveness. But I think that once you have glimpsed forgiveness, you know it's available.
Yeah.
But it isn't there in your amygdala all the time.
Well, no, but do you think it matters that we use the word forgiveness? Can we replace it with my peace, my content, my...
Well, that's the process. You have to name, forgiveness.
Okay, see, my interpretation...
Avoiding forgiveness is just avoiding the discomfort.
Okay, fine. And I don't know that I have to have that level of uncomfortableness around something in order to protect my peace, because if I simply replace the word, I've got my peace. I don't know why I have to. I mean, first of all, guys, we've had this conversation off mic a few times, and I think Marlis is attached to the word forgiveness. Well, and I really appreciate Dean's willingness to be less attached to the word forgiveness.
From my perspective, forgiveness is often so overlaid with this idea that by my forgiving, I somehow am letting the other person off the hook, or I'm making it okay, or making what they did just fine. And what I'm saying is that that is not what forgiveness is. But if you're consciousness and definition of that term is so interlaced with those falsities about it, then for heaven's sakes, use a different term.
Thank you.
Because it allows you to let go
exactly.
of what's simply not true. I want to say that forgiveness is something that we do with our heart, with our emotions. Forgiveness never happens in our head. If we think about forgiving somebody, what comes up for us is all of the story about how we should never forgive them. And all of the explanation and justification and all that nonsense from the past. That forgiveness comes from a place in which we, in our heart, in our feeling center, in our solar plexus chest area, in that part of our body, where that part of us just wants to finally let go of the burden, not the righteousness of the head, but burden of carrying that backpack any longer. And what I want to say for a final thought around this, you know, we've talked about the steps for forgiveness or steps you might take. I think ultimately there are some things that are just really, really hard. I think your situation is one of those. That it's that all of the strategies that we might come up with, like walking in nature and going to confession and whatever, will just not quite do it. And there's a place where sometimes you just have to create in your imagination some grotto or forest place or something, and you need to put an altar there, and you need to imagine going there with this backpack that's weighed with 100 tons of stones that you've been hauling around, and your heart is finally saying, oh my God, could we just let this go? And you're just willing to go set it on the altar. And no, you can always go back and pick it up again. No.
There's a lot of comfort in that.
Yeah. Know that somehow the universe or God or grace, or the angels, or however any of, I mean, I don't contextualize it in any of those beings ways. I just contextualize it as the universe itself, which is on its own flow into the future out of my control. But somehow the universe will take care of that backpack on the altar. And I don't need to carry it anymore because I no longer need to, it's out of my care anymore.
And see, I'm willing to set down the backpack as long as you don't call it forgiveness. Because no. If you call it forgiveness, I'm picking up that backpack.
Exactly.
So and I'm not doing it. So I'm not calling it forgiveness.
Don't call it forgiveness. Just call it letting go.
I'm letting go. You don't get to take my joy. You've taken
exactly.
enough.
You've got it.
All right.
You have got it.
Thank you. And that's permission for everybody out there too, to dive into what is going to find you your path to freedom. We're using the word forgiveness a lot here, some of us and some of us not. But if you can detach from that, because for me, the forgiveness does mean something more than what it maybe is intended to mean. It does mean that there's this permission that what's occurred is okay. And that this person was also doing their best. And in this case, I don't believe that this person was out to hurt people. Like with my dad, he had no gross crimes against me in my life. There was not a whole lot to forgive, but there was stuff. It's easy to use the word forgiveness with him. I absolutely forgive him. I know he was doing his best. He was such a great dad. All the things, that's okay for me in that situation. But when something really terrible, like being sexually abused by a parent or being physically abused by a partner or being robbed blind by a sibling at the end of a parent's estate, those things, the word forgiveness might be too much right now. And maybe someday in 10 years on this podcast, I will use the word forgiveness. Marlis's heart is singing, but maybe I won't. And right now, the most important part is that you find the path that leads to freedom for you. Fair?
Fair.
Marlis, can you agree with that?
I can. And I'm still going to hold out for, I think, Dean. And both of you have been brilliant. I mean, especially Dean in naming that as long as it's about thinking, it isn't going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
But if you are willing And for me, the term I use is that you almost have to take this level of pain, even if it's something atrocious that has been a travesty, that you take it into what I would call the heart of the absolute, the heart that holds all of us, and realize that the human journey, just there's inevitable suffering. And it isn't your suffering, and it isn't my suffering, it's our suffering. And if you can throw your pack back into the cauldron of our suffering, trusting that there is a larger heart holding all of us.
Yeah, I'm kind of feeling like we should pause here and even have a part two episode of this. Because I want to also be able to talk about and forgive supporters for acting like human supporters.
We've only touched the surface of this.
All right, we're going to come back for part two. Are you guys okay with that?
Sure.
Absolutely.
So thank you for being here today and listening to the first part of our forgiveness episodes. This is a big deal issue because this is the piece of the grief relationship that one can set down. There are so many pieces you can't. This is one that you can learn to set down, right? And we just want to make it honest because I'm telling you right now, it's really hard for me to set it down, maybe even impossible under certain circumstances. And that's okay. That's part of my journey right now. But where in this process can you set the backpack down? Where can you change the wording so that this is accessible to you? Where, you know, what's your meter? What's your barometer? How's my piece? So, okay, come back for the part two. Thanks, you guys.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us on Enduring Grief, Healing Practices and True Stories of Living After Loss. We hope today's conversation brought you comfort, understanding, or simply the assurance that you're not alone in your grief. If you found this episode helpful, please share it with someone who might need to hear it and subscribe as a way to stay connected. We'll be back next week with more personal stories and practical guidance for navigating the complexities of loss. Until then, take care of yourself and remember, there's no right or wrong way to grieve. You have the freedom to mourn in the way that feels true to you.